Chapter 1. Great ants do not make good house guests. Neither do ogres. Unfortunately for Molrox, Great Aunt Griselda was both.
Molrox.
The walls of his hut rattled.
Get in here.
I'd rather not.
Molrox said under his breath.
Grandnephew.
Molrox looked miserably at the map-adorned wall that separated him from his beastly great aunt, and then back at his blackboard. There, his latest poem, painstakingly scrawled out in his jagged handwriting, was almost complete. He had been working on this one for the better part of a month. Only the final couplet was left. If he stayed quiet, she might think he'd gone, and he could spend a little longer on...
Molrox!
A blur of motion from the corner of the room made Molrox look up in time to see his pet toad tumble from the top of her perch amidst a landslide of odds and ends and a cloud of chalk dust.
Geraldine!
Molrox closed the distance between them in a few hurried steps, clearing thimbles and hand drills and drawing nuts from his path.
Are you okay?
The toad glowered at him.
Of course you are. My mistake.
Molrox said, peering around the step stool at her.
You look...
Normally, Geraldine was a dignified animal. Large for a black toad, her head came up to his ankle. Down her back ran a single yellow stripe with a series of jagged lines radiating from it. Now, however, a fine white powder covered every inch of the toad. If it weren't for her golden eyes, which were giving him a particularly odious glare, she could have been mistaken for a garden figurine.
You look statuesque,
he finished. She swiped at him with her long, pink tongue, and Molrox chuckled. He brushed the dust from her back and then scooped her up into his arms. She softened, but then turned towards the offending noises, his old bedroom.
She'll go back to Ragok soon, I'm sure of it. Griselda hates it here. Why would she stay?
The map on the far wall shuddered again, and the crunching moan of splintering wood echoed through his hut.
All right, I'll tell her.
He set Geraldine on her perch.
She has to go.
He took a deep breath and made his way to his old bedroom, which was now serving as his great aunt's recovery room. Great Aunt Griselda lay sprawled out on the covers of Morix's four-poster bed, dressed in a nightgown that must have been several centuries old. The ridiculous lace collar stretched out in a cone around her neck, making her look like an unappetizing ice cream cone. The gown was too short, and her arms and legs poked out of the fabric, revealing dark blue skin as tough and weathered as corrugated metal. Two thick planks of wood, one in front, one in back, anchored her fractured hip bones in place. Next to her were the splintered remains of his side table.
Let's have it then.
She held out her immense blue hand and opened and closed it expectantly. Molrox looked around him.
The tooth file.
She pointed to the dresser, on top of which sat a metal file encrusted in flakes of old food and saliva. Molrox held the file out to her.
Here I am, cooped up in this horrible little room,
she said. Molrox stared at the hand-carved scene that ran along his bed frame, full of toads and squirrels and flowers. He glanced at the window seat in the far corner and the thick, mossy rug at the base of the bed. He tried to swallow down the ridiculous feeling of homesickness that clawed at his throat. She snatched the file from him and smacked the bed with it.
And now my teeth have gone dull. They barely tore through that old leather book you had lying about.
His stomach dropped. Shreds of leather and paper that had once been his prized volumes of Vraktar's poetry covered his bed. It hadn't been lying about. It had been in a place of honor on his desk.
Perfect outside, perfect inside, I always say. Maybe if you spent a little less time in here with your books and more time working on your smashing you'd look more like a proper ogre and less like an overripe tomato.
Marx's ears burned, and he knew he was turning that particular shade of maroon she was referring to.
There's no point changing colors on me.
Griselda scoffed and began to saw at her lower canine teeth.
It's the truth. Accept it.
Molrox couldn't help it. He knew he was only turning a darker shade. He was small, too small, and scrawny. Not at all the build an ogre should be. Griselda sighed.
It's no surprise. Grendel knows your side of the family has always been trouble. What with your puny necks and wild ideas, no underbites to speak of. Just look at what's happened.
Marx wanted to sink into the floor.
I'll never understand why your father sold off your land.
For me.
The words came out soft. He wasn't sure if he had spoken out loud.
For you? You should have left Ogle Prague altogether. Living in this hut, surrounded by those ridiculous flowers, and right on the border of the woods mercurial.
It's not so bad,
Mark said, trying to not look at her as bits of spittle and tooth sprayed the sheets.
You just stay out of the woods and it mostly leaves you alone.
I'll be the judge of that. My hip is no better. Thank you for asking. Apparently, for a quattro centenarian, my recovery is miraculous. Rubbish! How long have I been here? A week. 2 weeks. And I'm still strapped into this monstrosity.
It had been 4 days since she had appeared on his doorstep in the middle of the night with a bruised eye, a broken hip, and a mountain of suitcases. It felt like years. She leered at her hip.
They told me no more roofs. Can you believe that?
It seemed like sound enough advice to him. According to town gossip, it had been stomping through a roof and landing on a stone fireplace that had put Griselda in the state.
Do they think roofs gave in on their own? Bad omen is what it was. Blasted unlucky new moon. I told them it was no night for it. No moon. No rating. Dark as death it was. I've been crushing roofs with dead as doom for 4 centuries with no incident. No more roofs.
She shook her head.
Is that the rubbish they've been teaching you in Rape Brigade?
No, nothing's changed.
Nothing in Ogre Prague ever did.
Still the same. Drums, formations, smashings.
She regarded him for a moment.
If you're anything to go by, they aren't doing a proper job. I'll have to speak to Grox, or do you think the king pays us not to get our hands dirty? No. We are to instill fear in those dirty little tax evaders.
She took the file out of her mouth and began to wave it about.
A few broken windows will not cut it,
she spluttered.
The terms are very clear. Destroy everything but their puny people. Everything!
She had to catch her breath. It was as good a time as any.
You know, Great Aunt, I was thinking.
He was rushing through his words. Slow down, he told himself. He stared at the lines and whorls in the floorboard and continued.
If you would be more comfortable, we could always arrange for you to go home.
Silence. Many moments passed before he dared to look up.
Home.
Griselda was smiling. Marx tried not to wince.
It's an intriguing concept. I have a few more inquiries to make, but yes, we will discuss home. Let's say tomorrow at the Prague Rock. Is that soon enough for you?
He couldn't believe what he was hearing. He nodded.
I'll see you at the Slobber and Snore.
Again? That dump!
It's held there every week.
That place is a disgrace.
Morox loved the Slobber and Snore. He had practically grown up at the inn, hidden behind the bar or crouched with his arms threaded through the slats of the stairway, or darting from one lopsided table to the next as he shadowed Trollzar, the innkeep. Morix didn't have many friends, but Trollzar had always looked out for him, even when the rest of the town had turned their backs. And the Prague Rug was one of the few parts of being an ogre that Morix understood. Every week, they gathered to share food, stories, and Sven's music. Morix's mouth watered just thinking about the bone meal biscuits dripping with honey butter. There was even the occasional poetry reading, as long as the poem was properly bellicose and grim, and the reader did not get carried away with emotion. He didn't love all the droning on about tradition, but he tried to nod along and enjoy being a part of the group for once. He didn't expect Griselda to understand any of that.
It's the only place big enough,
Marx offered.
Miserable little town, without even a proper gathering hall. No choice of bean sprout wine to speak of. And that six-fingered slug, what does he think he's playing at?
Sven!
All that music, it's not Ogarian. Dishonesty will not be tolerated.
She was quoting from the old laws. Not known for their wits, the elders had had a natural fear of anything pretending to be what it was not. Most ogres ignored the laws banning music, storytelling, and art, but a few stalwarts like Griselda clung to the spirit of them.
What's a giant slug doing in a town full of ogres? It's suspicious. He has far too many fingers.
Sven
had lived in the slobber and snore for as long as Marx could remember. Ogres did not like outsiders, however. Sven was not only the best musician in town, but quite possibly the best in all of Vareby. His fingers flew over the strings of his thurobo, as though they were made for it. No one knew why the slug lived in Ulkerprog, but as long as he continued to play, they didn't much care. To Morox, Sven was a true artist, a kindred spirit, and Morox watched him from afar with admiration and longing.
Sven...
Griselda raised an eyebrow, and Morox felt that horrible color returning. He looked at the floor.
As I thought,
Griselda said.
Rinse this off on your way out.
Griselda chucked the file at his head. He put a hand up to catch it, but it clattered to the ground, splattering him with white and green fragments. The prog rug was tomorrow. He picked up the file with two fingers. It was slick with saliva. You can make it to tomorrow.
And try to keep it down out there. Grindel knows what you're playing at, but I need my rest.